How does our intro start?
Hello and welcome to Goblet of Wine.
Hello and welcome to Goblet of Wine, a drunken Harry Potter podcast. I'm Charlie.
And I'm Hannah. And we're two 20-somethings rereading our favourite childhood book, but this time with added alcohol and cynicism.
In today's episode, we're talking about chapters 20 and 21 of Order of the Phoenix.
So grab the dregs of your bucket of alcohol and join us on this reminiscent journey.
Oh, are we recording?
Hi. This is off the back of the last episode. We've had like an hour break to eat some food.
Yes. And we're still drinking the bucket.
We thought we would have a Patreon alcohol request this episode. We've had to push that back because we still have a third of the bucket to drink. And yes, we will not waste this bucket.
We won't. We cannot. We've spent so much money on this bucket.
I suppose it's not that much money when you think about like how many drinks we've had. What scares me is the volume of drinks we've had versus the number of wees I've had. It feels not the right ratio.
You're gonna piss all night long.
All night long.
All night.
All night long.
We cannot sing.
That was
not great.
That was bad. Anyway, we're still drinking the bucket of mixed TikTok liquid. And yes. By the way, when we say bucket, it's like a yellow storage box that Neil had to clean some like moldy dirt off earlier. Like,
great, thanks. We're such classy gals.
Honestly, like some people at work are like, I did a wine tasting this weekend. And I'm like, I filled a yellow bucket with cheap alcohol and drunk it whilst talking about Harry Potter.
Yeah, we're living our best lives.
Honestly, lives.
Look. I've drunk most of that bucket, so shut the fuck up.
We have shared the bucket.
Yeah.
Just because I've been scooping less because I started to put it in a litre water bottle.
Yeah, because you're organised.
This is Order of the Phoenix and we have some thank yous to do. Okay, so we have some new patrons to welcome to the team. So first off, a supersonic size thank you to Sari.
A China size thank you to Che.
A Whitney Houston size thank you to Witty No.
A RuneScape size thank you to Rusa.
A Magaluf size thank you to Marissa.
An Ollivander size thank you to Olivia.
A
Boom!
A Bartholomew from the Bible size thank you to Bree. I've never read the Bible. I don't know who's in there.
Is there a Bartholomew?
Pretty sure there's a Bartholomew.
There's like a Matthew and like a...
Old Testament. I'm talking Old Testament.
Like a Judas guy, right?
That's again New Testament. I'm talking Old Testament.
I don't know the difference.
I've never read either, but... Anyway, yeah. Thanks, Brie. Thank you all so much for joining Team Patron. They get access to the vlog of today, including
that
making the bucket that we keep forgetting to film. They get access to... Oh, we haven't even talked about this on the podcast yet. We recently recorded the next film commentary episode. So that is where we play the Harry Potter film and record a commentary over the top. So if you guys like start playing the film at the same time, you'll be listening to our commentary as you watch it. And we just did Chamber of Secrets and they are so much fun to record.
Yeah.
Like,
mostly because we get to watch the films.
Yeah. And we're just like chatting away. Like, mates.
I'm looking forward to us doing the fourth one.
And it's just screaming. 2 hours of screaming. Yeah. Of course. Yeah. So yeah, they get access to all of that. But also thank you to all of them for helping to support this podcast. Things this week that have happened are like a random wire breaking on our equipment, which is just annoying things we have to pay for. So the patrons help to support us on things like that, which are just irritating little things that happen.
Yes.
We also have a review from Ray the Nerd, and they said, great chemistry and fun tangents. Have really got into this podcast again. I needed something to listen to during work, so I decided to start up again. I'm just finishing Prisoner of Azkaban and will be working through 4 and 5 in the next few weeks. I adore the accents and the tangents the hosts get into. That's so nice. I'm glad you love the tangents because the last few episodes have like 20-minute intro tangents and I think they're hilarious.
I agree.
Good times.
That's my contribution to
great.
That.
So as we already said, the alcohol is a repeat from the previous week, which I don't think we've ever carried an alcohol over 2 episodes, have we?
The only ones are where like we've had Neil on and had to like split it into, I think.
I don't remember how we podcast.
I think at some point we talk about Harry Potter.
We're only 7 minutes in. That sounds way too early to talk about Harry Potter. It sounds like we haven't done enough. Bants.
What can we banter about? Excellent vibe that we're setting for this episode.
We're setting a really bad vibe. I think we need to reset the vibe for this episode.
How can we reset the... Wait, I'll reset the vibe.
She's resetting the vibe.
Oh no, this is a good vibe.
Did you see a hat just stand up? It was like a physical...
You did,
hat.
Yeah. She just glided.
You know when I'm going to be able to put most of this in the episode?
Abba's... Who's going to tell Abba?
Legal
reasons. No one's going to tell Abba.
No one tell anyone.
You can use a certain amount
when
and...
they scan it.
No, but we're Spotify. Talking over it, so they're not going to know.
I see.
As long as we sing.
See, as long as we continue to talk.
I don't want to talk. That fits so well, because you said as long as we continue to talk, and she said, it's so good. I told you this would set the vibe.
Put this in the vlog. Why is this not great vlog
stuff? Oh, yeah. Because I can't record and play music. That's why. Okay, right. Vibe over. The vibe has ended.
That was a rogue choice from you for an ABBA song as well, because that's one of the slower ones.
I
love that song.
It's
one of my faves.
Like, positive energy.
Yeah. That was beautiful. I feel a lot more alive now.
Same.
Let's go. Chapter 20.
Hagrid's tale.
Okay, I have a thing about this chapter.
Right, okay. Tell me the tale.
Okay, it's number one, it's one of the only chapters in Harry Potter where the entire chapter is just someone else telling a story, essentially. Apart from, the tale of the three brothers, maybe, otherwise. There are other things going on at the beginning and end, but it's mostly Hagrid telling a story. And also, I used to skip this chapter if I was rereading the books. Because once you know what Hagrid did, I feel like it doesn't add that much. Because I'm just like, yeah, okay. Which is, I really enjoyed making notes on it today. Maybe because I have listened to it a lot less or read it a lot less than the rest of the book.
Yeah, I quite like it. And to be fair, like, I don't read the chapters and really do that much critical thinking about how I like them as a chapter overall. Obviously, I kind of, you know, do the thinking behind to make the notes and stuff, but I never really think of them as a whole of a chapter. But now that you've said that, thinking about this as a chapter, I actually really like it. And I like it because I think that we get a lot more like background information
on
Hagrid, and we learn a lot more about Hagrid than we do at any other point, because Hagrid is kind of like, he's more of a caricature than a character at times.
Yeah,
like he kind of like speaks in like not like cliches, but just these like really classic like Hagrid kind of like moments, and he's a bit of this like big kind of like oafish but lovable buffoon kind of like character.
Yeah, yeah,
and we don't get like a huge amount of like real moments from him, but in these like two coming chapters
we really do,
and we learn a lot more about his personality type, and we learn a lot about how fucking diehard he is for Dumbledore as well.
I think me skipping when I was younger was more just like not understanding this chapter enough and just being like, oh, like, I don't know. I used to skip over, and this is not skip over to read the first time, like when I was heavily rereading as a teenager, but I used to skip over the chapters at the beginning of book 4, 6, and 7 that weren't from Harry's perspective and this one.
But like, Harry's not a great character.
I know. And now those chapters, are the book, like the other minister is one of my favourite chapters ever now. So it's like, it's funny how that's an adult thing.
I always loved that chapter.
Oh, did you?
Always. Like, and I think it was just like, I, even when I was young, was like, oh, thank fuck it's not from Harry's point of view.
Yeah.
Yeah. I also like, I like this chapter as well, because like, I think you know that I am a massive fan of the theory that Hagrid was always supposed to be evil. I just love it. Like, I don't know if it was real, and I think that if it was, she maybe like changed her mind quite early on. But I think that it's just an interesting way to read the character. I don't want him to be evil, but I think that it like adds a lot. And I think when you kind of think about what happens in this chapter, if you view it through the lens of actually thinking that Hagrid is a double agent, is really quite interesting. So that's like a second layer to why I love it.
You're making me think of, and this is not related, but that kind of, I suppose that kind of thing of characters being written as evil, then their author changing their mind, that Frozen was originally written with Elsa being the evil character.
Really?
Yeah, she was meant to be the villain. And even when the first trailer came out, she was the villain. The story that the heroes were the two sisters and the love came from their love got added much later on. And I'm like, but it makes the story what it is. So that's Interesting. So they rush to get the cloak to get down to Hagrid's, and there's this funny bit where they're like waiting around for Hermione and she's dawdling, and then she comes down in like gloves, hat, scarf, and she's like, it's cold outside. It's me when we go to pubs right now and all pubs are outdoors. I'm like, it's cold.
And then there's me in like a crop top.
Yeah. Charlie like texted me the other day. She was like, do I have to wear a coat when we go to the pub? I'm like, yeah. She's like, oh, I've checked the weather though and it's 10 degrees and I think that's borderline. I'm like, yeah, but if we stay out till 10 o'clock at night, it'll be 4 degrees and that's not borderline. This is 4 degrees Celsius, by the way, not Fahrenheit.
I don't think I wore the coat though.
You did have it off for most of the night. You did put it on towards the end.
Did I? Like I said, I don't remember.
We don't remember. They get to Hagrid opens the door and he is visibly injured, covered in blood and bruises, like Hermione screams. And he won't tell them why he's injured. He just like, he has this like giant raw steak that he's just like slapping against his face. It's a really vivid image that she's painting here that's kind of disgusting. They try to ask him what he's been doing and he's like, I'm not going to tell you. It's more than my job's worth. Dumbledore says I can't. And they're like, you've been with the giants.
Yes.
And he's like, you lot are little shits. You disgusting little shit.
But he's like, smiling.
Yeah. He's like, oh, I hate you all. You've always been like this since you were 11. Hee hee hee.
But it's also, he could have styled it out and be like, huh, no.
Giants,
but
who?
He's just like, oh God, oh, damn it.
Oh God, I now have to tell the entire story in great detail. They found me out. So Hagrid doesn't want to tell them anything, even when they've guessed it's with giants. And Harry is then like, well, I got attacked by Dementors. And Hagrid's like, what? And Harry's like, I won't tell you anything about it until you tell me.
Which...
And then doesn't tell him at the end of the conversation. He goes back up to the castle.
And also, like, why does this work? Because Hagrid could have just asked Dumbledore.
Like, poor Hagrid. He's like, oh no, tell me. Okay, I will tell you.
And then they just don't tell him.
Yeah, then they just don't tell him at the end of the chapter.
Brilliant.
I love it. Hagrid says he and Madame Maxime did go to look for giants. And it took them a month to get there because they had to walk. And I just wrote down Europe road trip, even though it's a walking trip, but also I kind of love it. Like summer, walking through Europe, walking through France. Then I think he said Poland and... what other country did he say? Just sounded like, nice.
I don't know about geography, but I feel like that would have taken more than a month.
They're very tall. Each of their strides is like 3 of yours.
I guess, yeah.
I think it's more possible than you think it is.
I guess. That just, yeah. Like, that's a lot of walking.
It is. It's a lot of walking.
Like,
it's impressive.
Hagrid would have been, like, ripped after this. Like, yeah. Just, yeah. Very like toned.
Hermione again is really cute. He's like, oh yeah, we like had to shake up some Death Eaters around Dijon. And she's like, ooh, Dijon, I went there on holiday. Did you get a chance to? And he's like, no. Like, did you get a chance to visit this museum?
Yes. So. Just imagine if they just stopped for museums along the way.
Well, he does stop at pubs. He says he got into a fight with like a vampire or something,
like,
in a pub.
Pubs could be to eat.
Yes. They have to eat at some point.
Yeah.
And by the sounds of it, if they're bumping into magical creatures, this is again this question I have. Because we asked it when Wormtail met Thingy in Albania. Mm. Does each kind of area of countries have a specific magical pub? By the way Hagrid's making it sound, yes, they do.
Yeah, there must be. Like, yeah. Just like wizarding settlements all over the place.
Yeah, because wizards tend to cluster together and therefore there'd be pubs and that's where you plan to stop off. Because we agreed that Wormtail would not have bumped into Bertha Jorkins randomly and that was probably a wizarding pub in Albania.
Yeah, it's gotta be, surely.
100%, yeah.
Yeah. Which is like a very niche thing.
Yes. It is.
Yeah.
I wonder how many pubs there are in the UK.
If you were like a wizard like on the run, you would just not go in a wizarding pub. That seems like a glaringly obvious fuck up. Surely.
Yes. He was like, I won't be recognised here. It's like
you're really narrowing it down.
Yeah. Or just like, you can be a human. You can go in a normal pub.
Yeah.
I do wonder how many pubs, because Harry is never like really of age in the books, there are in the UK, because we know of 3, but I hope there's quite a lot more.
There's got to be more.
Imagine there's one in each of the wizarding settlements.
Yeah. Yeah. And like maybe the ones that are kind of like mixed with like wizards and muggles, maybe there's like a pub there that's just like the pub where weird shit happens.
Yes. You know, or like, there's like a back room where they have like, there's like, oh, it's that club, but I don't really know who I can join. And it's actually just the wizards.
Yeah. But like, I feel like, I don't know, a lot of towns have like that really
weird pub.
And maybe that's just like the wizarding pub.
I hope so.
Yeah.
I hope so. So they get to the giants. They don't really describe where it is in Europe. We can presume if they walk through Poland, it's quite far in like northeastern Europe in the mountains somewhere. And they were worried about Death Eaters being there as well, that Voldemort had sent envoys of Death Eaters. And when they get there, there are 70 to 80 giants. And Hagrid kind of implies this is all that's left in mainland Europe.
Yeah.
Of giant population. And what we get in this chapter is actually, like, what I found really interesting reading it as an adult, is a kind of very strong allegory, which is a bit weird, again, because giants are human-like, but it's a very strong allegory for humans wiping out animals because of overpopulation and pushing them into certain areas and therefore them not being able to cope or like anything like that. It's kind of based on that. Like, the wizards didn't want giants in lots of different areas, so the giants were forced into one small area, but giants are not made to be all together, so therefore they then kill each other. And it's very cruel. And like, wizards don't seem to see this as a problem because giants are demonized by wizards.
Yeah, wizards really do just like make themselves the center of attention with everything.
Honestly.
It's just like, they just, the audacity.
I know. Like, giants are clearly sentient people who could punch you to death. Like,
it's just like bigotry just really runs rife in the wizarding community. And I wonder like what happened that like at some point in the wizarding development, like it just became kind of like a cultural norm that they just had this completely like self-centered, everything is about us, like we matter above everyone else, like we are the number one. And it's like, it is like a bad thing that race isn't directly talked about enough in Harry Potter, and that like for all we see and all we really learn about is that like the wizarding community is predominantly white. But also then when you like hear about this behavior, you're like, yeah, that adds up.
Yeah, that adds up. Yeah.
Like, this is a very white community, and you can tell by how they treat everyone around them.
Yeah, we literally learn from a half line that giants have gone extinct in the British Isles.
Yeah.
They no longer exist.
And
wizards are still like Ron's attitude when he found out Hagrid's mother was a giant, giants are vicious and dangerous. It's like, they're vicious and dangerous because you're telling them where they have to live and forcing them into these tight communities rather than just leaving them the fuck alone.
Yeah, and also it's just like, so what, they're vicious and dangerous? Like, at the end of the day, it's like, you wouldn't like be like, oh, like, lions are vicious and dangerous, so we should make them extinct.
People say that about sharks. Sharks are becoming extinct.
Just leave them alone.
Sharks are becoming extinct because people are like, they're vicious and dangerous, they should be killed. No, they shouldn't. And they kill, like, 20 humans a year.
Yeah.
That's not that many.
Just leave them alone.
Yeah,
just leave them alone and they're not going to kill you.
Yeah.
Like,
oh, my God. Then what we start to get, I just said it was kind of an allegory for animals going extinct, but as Hagrid then explains it, so Hagrid and Maxime approach the Gurg of the group, which is the leader of the certain group of giants.
This really makes me laugh because we have a guy in our Discord called Gurg.
Yes.
Because his name's Greg, and I always thought that it was like, just like
a spelling
Greg
thing.
Gurg.
Yeah.
And now I'm like, was this actually a Harry Potter
thing? Oh,
Gurg,
my God.
Can you tell me, was this actually supposed to be a reference? Or I can't remember the origin story.
Yeah, I can't remember now.
Yeah.
So they walk in carrying gifts, and they have to carry them like above their head so that they're known that they're carrying gifts. And like, the big vibes I got was like, what I know, which is not that much, about like white people entering tribes and tribal communities and being like, I am smarter than you, I need to talk to you about this thing, but I am going to appease you by carrying this gift of this thing that you don't know about because you're not in modern society. That was like the vibes I got, like heavy white people like being like, wow, these tribes people are amazing, but I'm going to give them a gift or something that will blow their mind. I don't know.
It's that whole thing with like the wizards where it's like they completely gatekeep magic. And even when there's like other like species that have like more magic than them, like if it's in a different form and like they don't let anyone else use wands and like they look down on like house elf magic, even though like in some ways it's like
stronger
a lot stronger
than theirs.
It's like they completely gatekeep magic and like, you know, there's nothing to say that like giants can't do magic in the wizarding way or that they don't have their own form of magic.
Yeah.
But it's like, oh, we offered them magic because it's like, no, you're offering them
your
kind of magic.
Yeah. Which historically you have like used as a weapon against them and now you're offering it as a gift. Like,
yeah, it's being like very, very selective. It's like, this is a gift to you as opposed to something that we're just like giving you as a standard, because it's like, okay, if the giants don't have magic, or if they don't have magic in a way that's like particularly like practical, then it's like, surely you should be using your magic to help them, especially as they're going extinct. But like, anyway, just be a nice person and like help them and like give them access to this magic to like help them as like a species, especially as they're going extinct. Why is it like this is a special gift for you, rather than being like, hey, like, we can like help you out, like, I mean, here is
right now it's a special gift for them, because the direct thing they're trying to do is get the giants to join Dumbledore's army, like,
yeah,
like they're trying to get them to join on against you know who, like they're trying to get them into war. And I understand like Dumbledore is doing this because otherwise they will go towards you know who, so he doesn't have any other choice. And Dumbledore is one of the only characters we learn through this chapter who is historically spoken verbally against what's happened to the giants. He said it to Fudge at the end of book four, that you need to send envoys. Like, he is someone who's outspoken against the giants, and like is, I would suppose, an ally of them, and doesn't believe in this gatekeeping. But yeah, right now he is trying to put them into an army.
Yeah, and it is him. Like one of those things where it's like, at least for like the wizarding world at large, it's like, maybe you, like, you should have made this gesture like 20 years ago, or like any number of years ago. It's like, it's like, in a way, like, I don't blame the giants for taking the side of Voldemort, because it's like, you should have done this a long time ago. It's like, why are you only coming to them when you need them and offering them this when you should have done that? Like, you should have not put them in a point where they're becoming extinct. And then when they were, you should have, like, given them that help. Like, this is something that always should have been there.
I just had a thought that maybe when the giants were forced to be extinct, and I would need to fact check this, and it might not exist, but maybe when the giants were begun to force to be into these tight-knit communities and like rounded up in certain areas is when the Statute of Magical Secrecy came in, because previous to that, muggles and wizards lived in harmony, quote-unquote, like they lived together. But after that, wizards went underground and became secret, and giants give that away. So wizards had to like make sure they were in certain areas, and that's when they became extinct, because to the wizards they're like, I am doing this for both your and my own good, because we need to stay secret. So it's kind of like a catch 22, but it's like, you could have come up with a better solution.
I feel like it almost kind of parallels what Christianity has done in a lot of areas. And like, what I'm about to say is like, not like I've, this is off the top of my head, like, I've not fact-checked this, and this is not, like, an area that I extensively know about. This is, like, from things here and there that I've read, so it might not be 100% accurate, but, like, what I believe is true is essentially that, like, Christianity, like, came into, like, a lot of African areas and helped create the, like, poverty in the situations that are there, and then later on were then, like, acting as, like, the saviours.
Yeah.
So, like, they created the issue, and then fucked off, and then later on came back like, we will save you. Like, and this is kind of what the wizards have done. Like, they've created this situation for the giants, and then later on, when they want the giants on their side, then came back like, here, have this magic, and it's like,
Yeah, definitely. It's a really interesting issue, and like, now as an adult, I'm really glad we have this whole chapter about it, because it's one of these other expansions of the Wizarding World, which I'm like, this is a fascinating, political, interesting issue that, like, this chapter doesn't even that go into enough detail.
Yeah, 100%.
So, they go down with gifts to the Gurg. The gifts have to be magic, as we just said, because giants are fascinated by magic but don't like it being used against them. But it's important that they go down with a gift on the first day, say, this is from Dumbledore, I would like to come back and speak to you tomorrow, and I will bring another gift. So it's like doing it slowly. Ron is like, why can't you just speak to them then? I'm like, do you, Ron, use your brain. So the next day they come back with another gift, and then they begin to talk to the giants, and the giants are pretty perceptive, like, this is looking good. However, that night there is a huge giant fight, and the Gurg, the current Gurg, Carcass, is killed. And I'm like, did you call him Carcass because he was going to be killed and his head's going to end up in a lake? Like a carcass of a person. Yeah, he's a carcass now. What do you even do with a giant's body? Do they eat each other? Maybe. Like, otherwise it's just rotting.
That would smell.
Yeah. So now there's a new Gurg, and they go to try to speak to him, but immediately he grabs Hagrid. And to get Hagrid free, Maxime has to use magic, which obviously does not make them happy, and they now hate Hagrid and Maxime. So they lay low for a while, and a few nights later, they spot Death Eaters are visiting the new Gurg, and it looks like the new Gurg even possibly killed the old Gurg because the Death Eaters had already been talking to him, and the Death Eaters had already won him over, which is a shame. And also, you think like it took them a month to travel there, and I'm like, I didn't realize it was such a time press on this thing. Like, was there not a quicker way to get... Like, I know they were being watched by magic, but I'm like, there was a time-sensitive issue here.
Yeah, it's also... This is, like, what I love, where I think that we learn a lot more about Hagrid's character when they're like, oh, so, like, you left. And he's like, no, of course we didn't leave. Like, Dumbledore was relying on us.
Yeah, it's, like, pretty amazing. He was like, no, I'm not leaving. Like, we will find another way to
like,
do this.
This is, like, imagine, like, doing a month of travelling and then... that going so badly, and you must just be like so exhausted and just like wanting to get home, and you know that you're missing like the school term and like you think that like you fucked up, like, and it's still gonna take you like a month to get home.
Mm-hmm.
And imagine we're like, no, we're gonna stay. Like, big respect. Like, I love Hagrid. Like, we obviously, like, we always like Hagrid's always portrayed as like a nice character. We see him favorably in that respect, but we don't really see a lot of like really like admirable, like, well, no, because we see him being like a very like kind and like a very loyal friend, blah blah. But there's always kind of this lens I feel that we have on it where it's like, oh, but then he like accidentally said this thing and he's such a buffoon, or like, oh, he's got like such a poor taste in like character when it comes to like magical creatures. Like, do you know what I mean? It's always like through Harry's eyes of looking down on him somewhat.
I also think this chapter and the next one gives us like a different side of intelligence. And we were talking about different types of intelligence in the last episode that Hagrid has that other characters don't. So in this chapter, it's to do with like the other ways he goes about trying to persuade the giants. So he goes and finds the ones that have been injured and like things like that. And in the next chapter, although it's framed through like Umbridge and it being a bad thing, he is the only person in Britain to have trained thestrals. That does not come from having no skill. That is an incredibly skilled thing he has done. Like, he has an amount of intelligence that like other characters don't have. It's just in a different genre.
Yeah,
that's not the right word.
Yeah, definitely.
So they decide to go out looking in caves for giants who clearly don't get on with the new Gurg, in the hopes of persuading some outliers to come and join them. And they find 6 or 7 injured giants who end up listening to them and are kind of interested.
That are all in a cave that Hagrid describes as there wasn't room to swing a kneasel.
Or a kneasel, as Stephen Fry stood it. Kneasel.
I just love this.
Yeah.
I'm just imagining so like
the giants literally like their heads and butts like literally touching the ceiling of the cave, it being that cramped.
Yeah, but it's just like, I just love that expression because it's essentially like if you would say like not enough room to swing a cat. And it's just like, why is this?
It's always been a phrase.
Like I just.
You would say it about this room right now with the bucket of alcohol. There's not room to swing a cat.
Like, why are you swinging this? Why?
You shouldn't be swinging a cat. Have you ever tried to swing a cat? They will attack you.
No, of course I haven't.
They will attack you. That's what I'm saying.
Why have you been swinging a cat?
I haven't. They would attack me.
My cats attack me when I try to pet them, so I'm not exactly going to fucking...
Me to attack you earlier when you tried to pet him.
To be, I was asking for it.
You were. You did literally like put your face into his belly, but he walked on you later.
He was fluffy.
So then the Gurg hurts or kills all these giants that Hagrid and Maxime have talked to.
Yeah, I also had a note just about how horny Hagrid is for a limp in this. All he does is gush. Like, she's so simping.
She's amazing. So
she loves roughing it, blah blah blah.
You would think because she's like French and a lady, she would have been all like, uppity, but no.
Yeah, he's got it bad.
I almost kind of like, though, that it's never confirmed in the books that they actually fully get together or just kind of friends with benefits. Like, I feel like a lot in the book, like, it's like these people got together, they got married, they had kids, and Hagrid and Limp are kind of left to be like they have found companionship in each other, but we don't know what that looks like, and that is all good and fine.
Yeah.
Hermione asks whether Hagrid found anything out about his mum, and he's like, oh, she died, she's dead, which is shame. And then as Hagrid is finishing the story, there is a knock on the door, and it's Umbridge.
So they hide under the invisibility cloak, and she comes in, and she like knows that people are there, like she's seen footprints and blah blah blah, but she like hunts around for them and just like cannot find
also,
them.
Also, Hagrid has no clue who she is. He's like, who? Why are you here? Who? Hello?
And he doesn't quite get, like, the severity of it.
No, why would you?
Yeah, so then she interrogates Hagrid as to where he's been, and he's just like, I've been away for my health. And she's been like, you look rough as shit.
And he's like, I tripped over a large broomstick.
Convincing lie there, Hagrid.
Oh, Hagrid.
Convincing lie. Just say that you're into BDSM. Be like, yeah, this is all kink injuries. Like, I got with a girl, she's really into knife play. Just say that.
She might fire him.
But you can't. That's kink shaming.
Umbridge can fire people for anything. I'm not saying it's right.
Yeah. So the chapter ends with Hermione warning him not to teach them anything dangerous.
Yeah. And she's like very determined to not let Hagrid be fired, which is very sweet because she has openly admitted that Grubbly Plank is a better teacher, but she is like, Hagrid will not be fired. I will not let it happen. Yeah. And that's very sweet.
It is.
Chapter 21. Eye of the snake. It's the eye of the snake.
That was really tuneful.
The fight.
I didn't remember, like, well, like, I knew what happened in this chapter, but, like, I forgot until, like, the end bit. So, like, the entire way through, I was like, why is this called the eye of the snake again? And then I got to the end and I was like, oh.
This chapter has, like, three distinct bits. There's, like, the bit with Umbridge, the bit in the DEA, no, the kissing bit. And then suddenly it's Mr. Weasley getting hurt.
Yeah.
There's like, there's a lot in this chapter.
A lot happens.
So it's the next day and Hermione goes down to talk to Hagrid to help to plan his lessons. Harry and Ron can't come because they have so much homework. And then the next day they go down to care of magical creatures. Hagrid leads them into the Forbidden Forest, saying he's the only person in Britain to train this herd, which is what I mentioned that like, that is amazing.
Yeah.
It's incredible. And all the students are like, what are you doing? We're all just in a forest and you've got half a dead cow.
Yeah. So then a horse comes out, but like, it's really apparent that like no one else can see them. And Harry's like, oh yay, like it's these things.
Yeah.
Like,
oh, it's these things. Yay.
They
Hagrid
do
knows what
exist.
They are.
But
oh,
then, like,
I thought there was a really cute nod. When Harry first sees the horse, he said, and a horse, or like the nose appeared between two yew trees, and yew trees are a symbol of death, and obviously the horses only appear when you see death. I was like, that's a very cute nod if you know like what things symbolize.
Yeah,
like,
that's nice.
That's an English literature thing with like a teacher would make you pull it out and be like, yew is a symbol of death.
Yeah, it's just... Yeah. Really, just all authors are really pretentious.
Oh, yep. Like, there was no need for that, but I like it.
Yeah.
Yeah, so Harry's really relieved. He's like, oh my god, yay!
But then, like, he's just realizes that no one else can see them,
yeah,
really.
Yeah, he's kind of like, Ron, look! And Ron's like, what do you want?
And then, like, slowly some people start to realise that just, like, flesh is being ripped off this meat.
Yeah, and Harry realises that, like, everyone else can't see it apart from him, Neville, and a Slytherin.
Yeah.
And there's, like, multiple people in this lesson. Hagrid does it more subtly, but I still find it a bit weird that he's like, who can see them? After he's just said you can only see them if you've seen death. I'm like, is that an okay question to ask children?
Yeah, but also like when Hagrid says that they're thestrals, Hermione's like, oh, and I'm like, surely from the context clues, she could have worked this out. Like, I just feel like that, like, what else is it gonna be at this point? Do you know what I mean? Like, if she knows what they are, you could have been like, well, I wonder what's invisible and ripping up this meat and that Harry can see. You know?
Yeah. Although, maybe that's why in the text, Harry only ever mentions them to Ron, because Hermione would have worked out all the textual things of Harry working out what they are. He mentions it to Ron.
True. But, like, she can't have been far away. They're really codependent.
She's just there like, I'm not going to tell him.
Yeah. I'm just going to let him think he's gone insane.
Yeah. So who can see them? And then they have to put their hands up like, I've seen a dead person.
Yeah.
Great. Umbridge arrives and... Oh, what she does in this next section is so disgusting. And I have, like, witnessed people doing this and it is absolutely revolting. She talks slowly and in a loud voice to imply that he can't understand.
Yeah.
But then she pretends she can't hear back to imply that his, like, voice and accent is worse than it is. And I haven't so much seen the talking slowly. I have, actually, to people with, like, how people interact with certain disabled people, but I've also seen people do the talking back loudly and pretending you haven't heard someone to people who have accents, and it's so derogatory, it's so disgusting.
Yeah, it's also the fact that then, like, Hagrid is being like such a nice person here, and this is like another bit where, like, I think that it speaks a lot to his character, where, like, she's speaking to him in this way and he accommodates for her.
Exactly.
He thinks that this is on her end.
He's like, oh, she can't hear, I'll mime.
Yeah, so he's starting to speak like slower and like miming things for her, like really like altering how he is thinking that this is how he needs to communicate
with
her.
But she knew he would do that. She is laying traps for
exactly.
him. She's laying traps because she is an intelligent person at the end of the day.
Yeah, and it's horrible, but I think that it really speaks to like Hagrid's character that he starts to do this and like not in a patronizing way, but yeah. he just like, you know, he matches her energy.
Yeah.
And like it's
really
it's nice that like he does that, but also like is yeah, it's him being nice in like a really like gullible way.
I know. Hermione is actually like crying with anger.
Yeah, because then Umbridge starts to be like, oh, like he has to resort to using mime, and it's like, no, he was matching your energy.
Yeah,
it's just oh.
She was doing it purposely.
And then, I got angry reading this.
I did, because then she starts to ask him trap questions.
Yeah.
So she asks him things which lead him where the only possible answer for him to give is wrong or is going to get him in trouble.
Yeah.
And then she starts to ask the class questions where they can only answer negatively. Like, do you ever struggle to understand Hagrid? Why is that the first question? Like,
yeah. It's completely like leading questions.
Oh, it's really horrific to read, because I realised upon reading this that I have witnessed not this extreme, but people do behaviours like this towards
yeah.
people.
And it's like she starts to interview the like students whilst he's trying to teach, and it's like, how can anyone focus when you're within earshot of like people talking about your teaching abilities?
Exactly. Like, and then it's like, oh, he loses the thread of what he's talking about. Yeah, of course he
yeah,
does.
Yeah, she's like, oh, he has poor short-term memory.
And like, the lesson was a good lesson before she
yeah.
showed up. Like, it wasn't a pretty good lesson.
Yeah.
And the question she asked the Slytherin are designed to trap Hagrid. Can you understand him? Then she literally goes up to Neville and says, who did you see die?
Yeah, as if, how does that like, how does that reflect on the
lesson?
And
then lesson? She's like, so, no, because she's trapping Neville again. So she's like, who did you see die? So do you like these Thestrals? Of course he's going to be like, I don't think they're great, because, like, it's a lot for him to process right now. So
yeah.
she's trapping him. Oh, she's, the thing is, what it shows is she's incredibly intelligent as well. She went into this situation knowing what she was doing.
Yeah.
And
She's so manipulative.
Oh, I hated it.
Yeah.
So it's December now. The book is like, it's December.
Yes.
Ron and Hermione are doing extra prefect duties, so they're out a lot. And December is kind of passing in a bit of a blur. Harry's like, I'm loving DA, la la la. But he really wants to leave Hogwarts for Christmas. He's sick of Hogwarts. Hermione's going skiing with her parents, but Ron is going to the Burrow and forgets to invite Harry.
Yeah.
And Harry assumes he's not going.
And like, Ron just assumes that he knows that he is, which is just like, really sweet.
I know. It's Ron's assumption that, of course, Harry knows he's going, that is
yeah.
unbelievably sweet, because he's like, why would I invite you? Of course you're coming.
Yeah, it just shows how, like, they're family.
And
like,
yeah, because I think even Hermione's reaction is like, you're an idiot.
Yeah.
Like, I'm like, oh.
Also, like, this would be me. I would never assume that. Like,
oh, I really, and then Harry's like, and Harry felt so happy. I was like, oh, baby, you really think Ron would go home to the Burrow and just be like, bye, have fun in Hogwarts.
Yes.
Oh.
So sweet.
Oh.
So Dobby decorates the Room of Requirement with like baubles with Harry on, saying like, have a Harry Christmas.
I think we need to get baubles with Daniel Radcliffe's face on that say, have a Harry Christmas.
Yeah. But also like ones saying like, have a Hannah Christmas, and then like, have a happy
Charlie. Have a happy Charlie.
Yes, exactly.
Yes, exactly. Yeah, and there's also like patches of mistletoe, and oh, Dobby is such a sweetheart. So Angelina walks in a bit of a mood, because she has finally replaced the Quidditch team, but obviously she's upset that like Harry
yeah.
friend George aren't there. But it turns out that Ginny has been made Seeker, and Harry's like, sorry, what? Sorry, what?
I've been replaced? You mean you weren't gonna
Ginny? And it isn't brought up for like another like half the book how Ginny became Seeker. It's really just dropped in this chapter and left, and I kind of love that. Like, everyone's just like, okay.
Yeah.
I love that Ginny clearly didn't tell anyone either. Like, she clearly didn't tell Ron, otherwise Harry would have known. She just went and did it and tried out, and now she's Seeker. I love it.
Yeah.
The lesson carries on like normal. Harry is repeating things that have already been done. So the class kind of had them in their brain. And then after the lesson, there's, I found this like so awkward, but also so accurate of things where you're this age, where you're wanting to hang behind to like talk to the person you fancy, but like you would naturally like walk back with someone. So Harry's kind of like, and Ron and Hermione eventually left without him. I'm like, what did you have to do to get them to leave? And I imagine like Hermione's like dragging Ron
Hermione
out the room.
Would
like
have instantly.
Yeah, she's like, we need to leave. And Ron's like, why are we leaving?
Hermione would have known it before Harry knew it.
Yeah.
Hermione
yeah.
would have been like trying to get Ron out of there. Ron would have been clinging on. About halfway through, Harry would have thought, oh, I could be alone with her here. Like,
yeah. I imagine it ended with Hermione literally like
dragging
Ron out of this room.
Yeah, because Ron just wants to wait for his bro.
Why would they not walk back to the Gryffindor common room together? And then Cho is like to Marietta, like, no, you go, I'll catch up. Why would you not walk back together? It's so awkward and it's just so reminiscent of school things where you want to hang around with your crush. I'm like, oh, I hate it.
Yeah. Harry hangs back to talk to Cho and then she just starts crying.
Oh.
Harry does an absolutely shit job of comforting her because of course he does.
She's like, if Cedric had known this stuff, he wouldn't have died. And like to Harry's credit,
and Harry's
like
he would have died anyway.
He would have died anyway. Which like she does need to hear because of the way she thinks he's not good enough. But like,
yeah.
But then she's like, oh, I'm sorry. Yeah, and then Cho ends up apologising. Like, she's like, I'm sorry, I'm crying. You probably don't want to think about this. And Harry's just like, yeah.
Yeah, it's Harry being so self-centered because I do get the like, I do get that he just wants to be able to like move past it and not be reminded of it. But it's like, so does Cho. But for Cho, she needs answers and to be able to work past it. And Harry could view this as like a shared experience with her.
I think that's what Cho's looking for as well. She's looking for that shared experience and Harry's not giving it to her.
Exactly. Like he just is. And, you know, that's totally fair. Like you, different people process like kind of, you know, trauma and loss and like grief differently. That alone is a sign that they're just not compatible.
No, yeah, 100%.
Cho goes from crying to horny within moments.
It is,
and it is the
impressive, single
most relatable thing.
She's like crying and then she just starts to walk towards him and then she's like,
yeah,
I really like you. And he doesn't reply. He's just like,
this is honestly, like, there's so many ways that you can read Harry because I think that you, like, can totally read Harry as bisexual.
Yeah.
I think that in this chapter you can read him either as gay or asexual. Like, honestly, like, he just does not fucking get it. Like, does he?
Like, this is like a girl he has apparently fancied for ages and she says, I really like you, Harry.
Yeah.
And he goes,
yeah,
and then
like
she
has
to
no
go
game.
And then she's clearly being like, she's clearly expected to be like, I like you too, and go in for a kiss. So she then has to be like, look,
mistletoe.
I'm like, Harry. And then he's like, his arms felt frozen. I'm like, do a better job at something.
Yeah, like I am amazed in Cho's confidence.
Well, I am. I live for it.
Because I would have just been like, oh, I really like you. And then he would have said nothing and I'd be like,
I'm
gonna
leaving
go.
And then I'm jumping out a window into the lake.
Yeah, so like go her confidence.
Yeah, like absolutely amazing. So Harry's like, I can see the freckles on her nose. She was really pretty even though she had been crying.
Yeah.
So then
the
just
chapter
like,
just...
No, it's not even...
No,
it just
not the
stops.
Chapter, but... Yeah, just this
but
scene.
But this is good because J.K. Rowling can't write sexually romance things, so it's very good that she just cut it.
Yeah,
and I like it almost because, and I think she mentioned this in an interview, she almost, I think she said, and this is how I feel about it, she felt it was intrusive to write it because it's like a first kiss and it's a private thing, and even though it's a fictional character, she felt it would have been intrusive to write it.
Yeah,
and I actually see that. I almost like that it cuts off because it gives this impression of first kisses, and Harry repeats it and it isn't perfect and it's messy and he didn't enjoy and it was weird, but it's private and it's yours.
Yeah, definitely.
And I like that.
So then Harry goes back to the common room and he's thinking about it.
So you know I said like when they're sitting by the lake is the moment I would have gone down to Harry Potter.
Yeah.
This and a chapter in book 7, which I'll reveal when we get there because I don't know why I'm keeping suspense, but I want to. But this section of this chapter is one of my favourites in all the books. I just think the banter, the way the banter is written between them is absolutely like perfect, like absolutely peak. I love it.
Yeah.
That makes me laugh every time I read this bit.
Yeah. But
Harry's thinking about it as a secret that he wants to take to the grave, which is just so weird.
I would never tell anyone I kissed a girl.
It's like, this is why I'm like, is he gay? Is he asexual? Like, the fact that, like, what? I just, it's
he's
such
confused,
weird
the
phrasing.
Poor little baby.
Like, he kind of just wants to keep it to himself, which, like, I do get, but, like, saying, like, a secret you want to take to the grave is like, what? You kissed a hot older girl.
Like, go on, tell everyone.
So weird.
So he gets back to the common room. I just love the image of Hermione and Ron in this moment because it so epitomises them. Hermione is sitting writing this incredibly long letter that's already, like, reaching the floor. And Ron is lying on the rug finishing his homework. And as a serial, like, floor liar, I really love Ron in this moment.
Yeah.
I do, don't I, though? I'm like, I will just lie here now.
Yes.
Harry is just in a daze. And Hermione is like, I know how to get answers out of him. I will turn into a businesswoman. So she's like, did Cho corner you? And Harry's like, yeah. And Ron's like, oh my God, oh my God. And then Hermione's like, did you kiss?
It's like, no wonder Ron and Harry are such good friends, because Harry, like, Ron is as unobservant as Harry is. Like, Hermione has clocked this entire time what's going on more than Harry has. And
what
Ron is
think?
Just
Where
clueless.
Did you think Harry was during this time?
Yeah. Like, what did you think was going on? Like,
I just love his, like, puppy dog enthusiasm and his best friend's kissing. He's like, oh my God, did you? Was it nice? Was it weird?
Yeah, he's
I love it.
He's
you can
so
tell he's the
it.
Most childish out of the three, though. Like,
yeah,
off the bat,
by far.
His reaction to the kissing, he's almost, like, grossed out but intrigued by it. I'm like, oh, you are not ready to kiss someone yet, my love.
Yeah, no, he's really, really
he's
not.
He's really, really not.
He's really not.
So, yeah, Hermione is asking about Cho in a business-like voice. Harry says the kiss was wet because she
yeah,
was crying.
Yep.
And then we get one of the best moments of the book. So Ron asks if Harry is that bad at kissing. Hermione says, of course he's not. And Ron's like, how would you know?
And then Hermione just goes into everything Cho's feeling.
Oh my God. And she, like, analyzes it. And then she has two of the best lines of the whole book. So she's, like, breaking down how Cho's feeling, why Cho's feeling, how she knows it. And then she says, Ron is the most insensitive wart she's ever had the misfortune of meeting. And that Ron has the emotional range of a teaspoon. And I'm like, beautiful woman, these words you craft about this childish man are perfect. Like, I live for it. I'm living for her in this chapter.
Yeah.
But yeah, Hermione's got, and it's really interesting actually, because I read this book for the first time when I was, God, I don't know, I suppose 11, 12, and I don't feel I understood the emotions that Hermione was describing about Cho. I was like, God, that is a lot. Like, I don't get that. Reading Hermione's explanation of it now, I understand completely everything Cho is feeling, the confusion, because does she really like Harry? Is it a reaction to the grief? Does she like Harry more than Cedric? And, like, all this building up, and she's very clearly very depressed, and no one is here to help her. Like, Hermione's like, she's crying at mealtimes and lessons and the toilets all the time. I'm like,
same.
Maybe she needs some help.
But also same. Harry just seems terrified of Cho and terrified of women in general.
He's terrified of the explanation. He's like,
oh. Yeah, just completely overwhelmed.
And then Hermione's just like, so are you going to date her? Are you going to see her again? And Harry's like, yeah, I'll have to see her in the lessons.
Yeah,
and
like just the thought had not occurred to him
that he
to
might
ask,
want to date this woman.
Yeah.
Harry is not ready to date
honestly
someone in
thinks
this
that
book.
They just kissed and he just stood there for a moment and then just left.
No, she started crying for a full half an hour.
No, I like, in my head, they kissed.
I like to think he said thank you.
Yeah, he definitely said thank you. And then just left.
Why wasn't all of this moment in the films? Aww. This passage was one of the best things ever. Oh, so then... Harry's like, oh, the idea of dating her had never occurred to me. And then he's like, oh, but I guess whenever I imagine her, I imagine her happy. And that's not what she is now.
Yeah.
I'm like, oh my gosh.
I do feel really bad for Harry in this chapter because I just feel like he deserved, like, a happy, good first kiss. And this was, like, a traumatizing first kiss.
Not that that's Cho's fault, because Cho needs some therapy and Harry really doesn't deal with her grief in any way that is healthy at all. But yeah Harry he's also not deserves...
any, and, you know, Harry's not to blame, Cho's not to blame. But I just, like, Harry deserved, like, a really happy, and this is, like, so complicated and depressing and like traumatic.
Brings, yeah, and brings up so much for Cedric, which, like... Even for, it's very tied up and mixed up for Cho, but for Harry it's very mixed up. Like, you wouldn't want your first kiss marred by the fact that she dated a guy who you'd seen murdered. Like,
yeah,
it's not nice, which is why I really love his relationship with Ginny, as poorly as it's written in book six, because it is simple and happy.
Yeah.
There is nothing complicated about it. It's just they just like each other. And, like, I think that's really beautiful.
Yeah, 100%.
Ron demands to know what Hermione is doing, like, why is she writing this letter? And Hermione's like, oh, I'm writing to Victor.
Yeah, I love that they stay in contact. Especially because I'm like, what does she have to say to him?
It's
especially
like a
this long.
Six, like, foot letter.
Like, the man's a himbo. Chill.
I imagine slightly that because she was writing it in front of Ron, it's just full of nonsense, but she just wanted to keep writing until Ron asks her who it's to.
Oh, 100%.
She's like, he will ask if I keep going. And, like, the letter is just like...
It's
random nonsense.
It's not even a several page long letter. She just kept rewriting the same letter until
asked. Ron asked her. Like, this is my headcanon that she's like, she will, like, I'm not going to make him. And eventually he asks, Victor, Crumb, how many other Victors do we know?
Love it.
He's so obviously jealous. He then, when he goes up with Harry to the dormitory, is like, what does she see in him? And Harry's like, well, he's older and he's an international Quidditch player. And Ron's like...
And he's a himbo.
Yeah. And Ron's like, yeah, but apart from that... Ron's like, he's a bit grouchy though, isn't he? I'm like, so are you.
Yeah.
So are you, mate. Literally. Apart from you're kettle. Not an international Quidditch player, so
exactly.
You're worse.
Exactly. Or a himbo.
Or a himbo. You're just a sweet, misguided man who isn't ready to kiss anyone yet.
Yeah.
Harry is very confused as he goes to sleep, and he begins a dream, which is, like, so classic when you've got a lot on your mind. Like, J.K. Rowling actually describes dreams in a really good way when you've got a lot on your mind. Like, the way that Cho is demanding he gives him chocolate frogs cards, and then, like, Cedric gave her hundreds. Like, it's an accurate dream thing. But then the dream changes very suddenly, and he is a snake.
He's a snake.
Slithering along a corridor. I'm a little snake.
I'm a snake.
I'm a little snake. The snake sees a man sitting in front of a door. And the book kind of states that the snake did not intend to bite the man at first. That wasn't his plan. Mm. But the man stirs, so he has to attack him. And he bites him multiple times until the man goes still and stops screaming. It's like a pretty intense description.
Yeah.
And at this point, Harry opens his eyes. He's covered in sweat. His scar is searing in pain, and he rolls over and vomits. And this description of Harry in so much pain, like, I found it really upsetting because he was a child. Like, especially something about the vomiting. I was like, he doesn't have pet. Like, imagine being 15. Like, I would want an adult to just hold me. Like, hold me. And, like, Ron is there like a shot. Does not leave his side. Even when Harry is vomiting, he's like, just wait, talk to me. Like, Ron stays with him, but Harry needs, like, an adult to hold him.
Yeah.
Little baby.
Little baby. I think this is really interesting as well because it's like, we've seen a lot of Harry kind of having these, not even like premonitions, but seeing things through Voldemort's eyes. But in this moment, he's seeing it through another one of the Horcruxes. And that's really interesting because it shows that there's like that link there. Like,
I thought it was because, no.
But he sees it through the snake's eyes.
Yeah, because Voldemort is intentionally seeing it through the snake's eyes. So Voldemort is choosing to look through the snake's eyes at this point. So Harry is seeing it through the snake's eyes.
Yeah, but I also think, like, because there's a bit of Voldemort's soul
in
the
snake.
Yeah,
like, they all connect easily.
So
it's
one in the same. It's not that Voldemort is possessing the snake. Voldemort is the snake. Like, he's in the snake. So
therefore
Harry is just seeing it through one of the other Horcruxes, which is, like, very interesting.
It is. It's like a good hint for the whole thing. If you were, like, counting the clues, like, looking back, you're right.
Yeah. Exactly.
Yeah. Harry manages to sit up. And the chapter is actually really good at building suspense in this because when the snake does not recognize the man, it is just a man.
Yeah.
It is Harry who recognizes him. But the chapter hides that until he grabs Ron and says, your dad has been attacked. We need to help. And it is a proper, like...
moment.
And, like, you're like, sorry, what?
Yeah, and it tells you that it's not just a dream, because if it had been a dream, in the dream Harry would have been like, Mr. Weasley.
Mr. Weasley. That's
it's the fact that it's like a man, and then he wakes up and he's like, it was your dad, that tells you that that was not a dream.
This is where if it was a TV series, it would cut off as he grabs Ron and says, your dad. Your dad has
and
been
then
attacked.
Go to ads.
Go to ads. Like, yeah. Oh, I can see it. I can see it. Yeah. So, but Ron is like, Harry, you're ill. You are not okay, and doesn't believe him, which like is understandable.
But also you wouldn't want to believe him.
No, but also like we learn in a later chapter, Ron has seen Harry thrashing for the last minute. He knows he has been in his bed. Neville, bless his little heart, runs for help.
Yeah.
I wonder like if there is like a quick way to get McGonagall or someone when you need help, or does he have to run halfway across the school?
Well, you would think that it would make sense if like the head of house is there, like rooms were near the common rooms.
Yeah, we don't actually know where Professor McGonagall's sleeping quarters are. I assume they're not in the Transfiguration common room.
So she comes down when there's noise
very
a few
quickly.
Times, so it must be that she's like
in the tower
or
somewhere.
Yeah, because
she comes within like a minute and a half. So I'm assuming she's with, like, you would have to be, for safety reasons, have an adult in the tower.
Exactly.
So yeah, she comes. So, but there is a minute wait, and the book describes it as like this horrific kind of like, it felt like an eternity, which I can really feel because Harry is there, like, he's bleeding. I need to go. McGonagall arrives in a dressing gown and Harry says, Ron's dad's been attacked. He saw it. And at first McGonagall is like, you mean you dreamt it? And he just starts yelling. He is like, no, I saw it. I saw what happened. You have to believe me. And obviously McGonagall knows the rota of guarding the door to the Department of Mysteries. So as soon as Harry says like,
but does she know it that well?
I think so.
Because I was thinking about this and I'm like, because I don't like, because I feel like the teachers at this point like are potentially slightly out of the Order of the Phoenix in that like they probably can't attend every meeting and blah, blah, blah. So they might not actually be privy to exactly who is
That's
every
a good
single
point.
Night.
Yeah,
it's
they might like, not know the rota. Yeah.
It's not like they've got a Google sheet and they can't be sending letters back and forth
with this
information.
But she knows that Mr. Weasley is in rotation for guarding. So when
that doesn't, you know, but I'm like, I wonder if Dumbledore had given her the heads up that at some point Harry might see something
because,
and to take it seriously.
Yeah, because so Dumbledore is scared this whole book that Harry will get possessed, so therefore he can't give Harry for information or speak to him in case Harry does something. So yeah, maybe she's given McGonagall the head up, or maybe it's just McGonagall's instincts in the way that she knows Harry. Like, she knows Harry incredibly well and knows when something is wrong, and she is like, I believe you, we're going to Dumbledore.
Yeah. Yeah.
I appreciate McGonagall.
I do. But yeah, so...
Also, she's standing there with, like, a pool of vomit around her because Harry's vomited on the floor twice, bless his little soul. Yeah. And Dean and Seamus just like, what do we do with that? It's just vomit everywhere.
Yeah. So then McGonagall takes him off, presumably, to go see Dumbledore.
It's a very wild chapter, that one.
It is.
It's like, actually,
it,
like, a very exciting chapter.
It bounces about. And I like that it goes from this kind of, like, oh, we kissed. Oh, I should have asked her out, to suddenly, like, someone's dying.
It is one of the lightest, most funniest passages in the book to one of the most suspenseful, which is really great, I think.
Yeah, really good.
We have a question.
So this is from Becky, who says, I can't stop thinking about a comment you made in book two about Snape being Gina from Brooklyn Nine-Nine. I love that I can't remember this.
Oh, I already messaged her being like, I cannot remember saying this comment, but if you say we said it, I believe you.
It sounds like something we would say. I just can't remember why we did. So does that mean Gina is a Slytherin? If so, would you sort the main characters of Brooklyn Nine-Nine into their Hogwarts houses? Okay. I think it would be hilarious to see what the pair of you would sort them into. Okay,
okay, I'm getting just so that I don't miss anyone and like things like that.
I mean, Jake is a Slytherin, a Gryffindor.
Jake is 100% a Gryffindor. Amy is
Ravenclaw.
A pretty obvious Ravenclaw. Rosa?
Slytherin. Yeah.
Terry's a Hufflepuff. 100%.
Yeah.
Terry loves yogurt and Terry's a Hufflepuff.
Holt?
Ooh, Holt. Ravenclaw.
Yeah. Boyle. Hufflepuff.
Hufflepuff. Gina. So is it Gina that we said was...
Yeah.
So apparently we said she was like Snape. I do not remember making this comment.
I'm sure we had a reason.
I think she's a Slytherin. She's incredibly...
Yeah, Slytherin.
Like, not self-centered, self-possessed. Like, she's incredibly... She knows what she wants.
Yeah.
Scully.
Hitchcock. I'm counting them together.
They're one person, and they are Gryffindors?
Yeah. Yeah. I think Gryffindor.
Dark Judy!
Oh, the best Slytherin.
Yeah. Oh, I love Doug Judy. I've been watching all of The Office in this lockdown, and now I am like the two characters are, like, confused in my mind.
Yeah. Pimento.
Oh, Pimento is wild. Oh my gosh.
God, he
Gryffindor. Maybe. I think that's all the, like, the main characters.
Yeah.
All the rest are, like, minor.
That was fun.
We were so aligned. I think that's the thing with sitcoms, is characters are caricatures, so they're easy to sort into houses.
Yeah. But, like, this is why, like, recently I tweeted about, I made, like, a kind of master list of TV sitcom tropes, and I've been just sorting everyone I've ever met
I'm the square.
Yeah. Sorry. Apparently I'm the bully, according to other people.
Oh, you are a bully.
Yeah.
No, you're not. You only bully people you like.
Yeah, exactly. And those that I don't like, I'm really nice to.
That's a bit scary. Thank you so much for that question, Becky. That was actually, like, super fun. Although I do not remember making that comment, so...
I don't. I'm going to have to go back and try and find that.
Yeah, which episode is that,
actually,
please?
If someone could just tweet us to tell us what the fuck we said.
Tell us when we said that, please. Because someone do the work for us.
Yeah, basically.
We listen to our own voices enough, please.
Exactly.
This was a really fun episode. If I sound exhausted, it's the... I am both exhausted and so hyped up, and there is still more left in that motherfucking bucket.
Knee will drink it. Let's make him drink it. Just chug.
Should we get him in? Nia, do you want any more of the bucket?
Are you sure?
It's going down the sink.
Bye, guys.
Thank you for listening to this episode of Goblet of Wine. To find us on social media, search at Goblet of Wine Pod on Twitter or at Goblet of Wine Podcast on Instagram. We also have a website over at www.gobletofwine.co.uk where you can keep up with everything that we do. This podcast is produced by our wonderful Hufflepuff tier patrons.
Veronica, Sandra, Samuel, Rhiannon, Matalib, Matt, Kristen, Katie, Catherine, Emily, and Alexia.
If you'd like to support this podcast, check out our Goblet of Wine Patreon, where you can also gain access to bonus episodes, behind-the-scenes content, and our Discord. Thank you so much for listening to this episode, and we'll see you in the next one.
Bye!